Well, we're ready to start the second lesson in a series we're calling Unpacking the Book, or in the vernacular of our office, 2012 UTB number 2. You know, I was thinking about a way to introduce this whole discussion of timelines. And I don't know how you are with American history, but I know the first few presidents. I can tell you when we first started in terms of American history with the president. I can tell you the Civil War was 1865, 66. I can pinpoint when, you know, Truman was president. I've got a few benchmarks. But if you throw at me, I don't know.
The Marshall Plan.
I'm going to go, Marshall Plan. World One, World War Two. Who was president? Marshall, maybe Marshall. Hey, I don't know. Was he a president? I'm starting to narrow it down, where to put it. It's exactly that same way with Bible stories. You need some reference points. You need every few hundred years to have something in your mind that's firm and settled and you know it, and you can reach it in your mental picture and then hang something. And so today, last week we talked more about the physical geography of the land. This week we want to talk about some sort of a time frame, the history of the Bible from a couple of time frame perspectives. And I've done it two different ways, trying to see which works for your kind of mind. So let's dive in, and first, for a second, before we look at maps, which I'm not sure why we're looking at that. Let's see if we can get this to work the way it's supposed to. I thought we had this all set up and ready to rock and roll. Well, you get to look at that. Sorry. When you look at a timeline or a designation of time, after the date, it'll say BC or AD, or in our common vernacular now, it'll say BCE or CE. I want to just tell you why, if you haven't figured that out yet. BC stands for, before Christ. AD stands for, after somebody? No. It stands for the Latin Anno Domini, which means the year of the Lord, or the year of our Lord. Those were the common designations for time for a very long period of history. Common era, which is really what the CE stands for, became very popular in the last, 10, 15 years. The secular world didn't much like indicating time based on the life and person of Jesus Christ. And so they wanted to come up with a different designation. So they came up with BCE, before the common era, and common era meaning CE. Interestingly enough, it still triggered off of pretty close to the birth and death, or birth rather, of Jesus Christ. You should know, though, Anno Domini is not an exact, because we don't have a zero year, and Christ really was not born zero, nor was he born 1 AD. He probably was born somewhere between 4 and 6 BC. And when we get to the life of Christ, we'll talk all the reasons why that's true. It's triggered off of what we know in history. We know when Herod came to power. We know when Herod died. We know Jesus' life in reference to Herod, so we can date it. So the zero year of the life of Christ really isn't quite right, but you get the idea, AD, BC, etc. So here's a timeline. I'm going to call it a linear timeline, and I am going to see if I can't fix this and make this work. There we go. You're going to start in the one timeline that I gave you, which is kind of a linear one. It starts with the column on the left says the book of the Bible, and then the column in the middle says the approximate date, and then it gives you a key person. Y'all with me so far? Okay, we have no idea when creation happened. We don't. There are great arguments about an early date. There's great arguments about a late date. I will not even hazard a guess. I'm not a big enough scholar to try to pinpoint it. Somewhere in the past. All of these dates are approximate. If you go online or you grab some good commentaries and you start diving into the timeline, you're going to come and want to fuss at me. It wasn't 2150 for Abraham. It was 226. Okay, we can make cases for all kinds of dates depending on what we target as a benchmark. But my purpose of giving this is to give you an order that this came before this and this came before this, and there was about 1,000 years between. So let's not fuss when you find a site that says, well, my site said Abraham was 2200 BC. Fine, good for you. But the one I'm using has got 2150 for Abraham. Now, the first slide, I just wanted to remind you, good old Western Civ, you all, you know, took that class somewhere along the line, either high school or college or somewhere. And getting the Western Civ in your mind is a very healthy thing. Hi, ladies. There's one right up here. There's one right there. And there's one in the back. So pick your poison. Fertile Crescent. This is a crescent. Yes. It's fertile because that's where everyone lived, worked, had agriculture. Nobody had any here. You know, Sinai Peninsula was not exactly, or Sinai Peninsula would be down here. But this part, Saudi Arabia, not a great place to grow crops and live. So the fertile crescent, the crescent over which you passed. If you were coming from Abraham's place, the Ur of the Chaldees, and you went up to Haran, and then you ended up coming into Israel, you didn't go across. You came up and around the fertile crescent. So that's kind of makes sense. If you're looking at a normal map, same idea. It's starting to get into your mind how this thing all works. Here's Israel right here. Got the Dead Sea at the bottom, got the Sea of Galilee, got it, no problem. We got Egypt over here. Everybody so far, I'm standing right in front of you, I'm sorry, I'll move in a minute. The Babylonian period and the Babylonian kingdom down this part, Assyria up here, and a number of other places that are named in our Bibles, the Hittites and the, you know, all the other right boys. This is what you should start getting in your head, that map. You know, at some point we give you a blank piece of paper, you should be able to draw that. Wait till we get to the final in this class. Cannot wait. Don't get scared. Don't get scared. Get back here. And the fun part is I publish your scores to the kids. Okay, looking at the same map, just a slightly different perspective, looking at the neighbors. I mentioned a moment ago the Hittites and the rest of the Ike boys. So you got the Egyptians, you got Israel, you've got the Amorites, the Hurrites, the Assyrians, the Babylonians. That's the picture. And it all flows up, off, and around from the Fertile Crescent. And remember, last week I said to you, I pretty much know where the Garden of Eden was because of the four rivers mentioned in Genesis, the Genesis 2, I think it is. They all come down here. We know two of them, the Tigris and the Euphrates. They come together down here. It's got to be somewhere down there. So in your current map looking, you can bear that in mind. So Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, we get to Jacob. And this is a cool map. And I started to put one in your notes, and I don't think I did. Maybe I should have, but I didn't. The reason it's cool is I wanted to give you some sense of how a map matches up with the timeline. Now this one is one called Old Testament Events. And just to, again, orient yourself, here's the Dead Sea, sometimes called the Salt Sea. Here's the River Jordan flowing up. There's there. It's not flowing up, it's flowing down. Sea of Galilee at the top. Now, on this particular map, it highlights several different events in the life of Jacob. So let's just pause for a second and show you why a map like this might be helpful. So if you started down here in the bottom, it's really hard for you to see from where you are, but let me get me out of the way a little bit. Beersheba, which is a city in the south. That's in Genesis 27. That's where Esau gives Jacob his birthright. Remember, Esau comes in, he's starved to death, and Jacob's cooking up some really good stew, and he ends up giving away his birthright. That's where they were in Genesis 27. Then a chapter later, Genesis 28, Jacob is going to have a sense of God by seeing God descending and ascending on a ladder. He's right here, just outside of Bethel. So he's in Beersheba down here. Then the next chapter, he's here in Bethel. In Genesis 29, Jacob hassles with his father-in-law, Laban, to try to get Leah and Rachel as wives. That happens in Haran, way up here, one chapter later. Two chapters later, in Genesis 32, Jacob's going to wrestle with God. He does that out of Peniel, which is, Peniel is right down here. So I highlighted that just to show you, here's Israel, the life of Jacob in what, five chapters. He's from Beersheba all the way up to Haran, all the way back down here to Bethel, all the way over here to Peniel. So they're moving around. They're not in one little location. Somehow we have it in our mind, you know, they'd all happen within a 4-mile radius or something. Remember, that's only what, 70 miles wide, 200 and whatever I told you, miles, 350 up. So it's not a huge piece of land, but lots happened, and they were moving all over the place. Still looking at that map for a second, Moses died before they got into the Promised Land. Remember, he wasn't allowed to go in. But he could see it. So if you were coming up out of Egypt, and you were coming around, and we'll get to this when we get to that section, they wander around the desert down here for a while. They're going to come up on this side of the Dead Sea. He's going to stop right there at what's called Mount Nebo and look across and not get to come in. So that's where Moses died. When I was floating on the Dead Sea, I looked over there and went, oh, Moses is buried up there somewhere. I'm sure a million people have tried to find Moses, but anyway, that's where Moses was. What about Elijah? We talked about this a little bit last week when he's up on Mount Carmel calling down fire from heaven. Mount Carmel's up here. Let's see. When Joseph was sold into slavery, remember he went, his father said, go take this stuff, find out how your brothers are doing that are out tending the sheep. And his brothers grabbed him, threw him in a well, and eventually sold him into slavery. He was just outside Dothan, right here. So you could take a good Bible atlas, which I'm going to make some recommendations about which ones I think you should buy. But you could take a good Bible atlas and start to plot your Bible work. If you're taking the book of Genesis, it's really easy to plot where it's going. And it makes it richer and fuller as a student of God's Word. So that's Jacob. We're going down our timeline. We got Joseph and then Moses. We've got the Exodus, and there's various dates for the Exodus, but about 1445 or so B.C. Obviously, these are before Christ. They're going to wander in the desert for a period of time. There's going to be the conquest. They're going to come in and conquer the land. And in conquering the land, they're going to carve out sections of it for each of the 12 tribes. And we're going to spend some time about why they carved out what they did, which tribes existed down through the ages, which ones got absorbed by the tribes that were around them. So the conquest of Canaan. Then Joshua's going to die. Then there's the period we call of the judges. Now you say, I don't know much about the judges. Yeah, you do. What's the story of Deborah? Somebody? Story of Deborah. Give me a short synopsis of Deborah. Okay, so when we get to the judges, you're going to know more about Deborah. How about Gideon? Anybody know anything about Gideon? Gideon. Yeah, trumpets, bud. Fleeces. Okay. How about Samson? Know anything about Samson? Cut hair, right? Okay, you know that story. Story of Ruth. Where you go, I go. It's quoted at every wedding, which I think is so funny because it was a daughter-in-law to her mother-in-law. It was not a love relationship. But we quoted it at every wedding. Okay, all of those stories are in the period of the judges. Deborah, Samson, Gideon, Ruth, they're all in the period of judges. Then we get to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel is a history book. And in a minute I'm going to try to give you a way to organize these, but I'm just trying to flow now down through this. We get to Samuel, and we got the history books. First Samuel, Samuel himself is born. And then we start the kings. We got three kings in the United Kingdom. Started with Saul, then went to David, then went to his son Solomon. Now, before Saul was a king, Israel didn't have a king. It had judges, regional rulers. And they clamored. They said, everybody else has got a king. How come we can't have a king? And God said, you don't want a king. If you got a king, he's going to tax you. He's going to make you serve him. You don't want a king. I will give you a little regional rulers. It'll be much better. But what do the people say? Oh, no, we want a king. We want to be just like everybody else. Sounds like a teenager, right? And he gave him a king. Was Saul a good king? No, he was not. He was not. Then we get David, man after God's own heart. Then we get his son Solomon. And after Solomon, the kingdom splits. It splits to the divided kingdom, Jeroboam to the north and Rehoboam to the south. Rehoboam is Solomon's son. We got 10 tribes in the north. We got 2 tribes in the south. And we will spend some time talking about that. Just as a visual, there's your divided kingdom. Judah is much smaller, as you can see in the south. It's the salmon color or whatever that is, brown. The Philistines are in the green along the edge of the Mediterranean. They were the seafaring people. And then Judah. And then the pink is Israel. Now you say, well, wait a minute. We call all of that area Israel. Yeah, sometimes we do. But the distinction in the Bible is most of the time when the word Israel shows up, it's referring to the 10 tribes to the north, not the two in the south. And again, when we get to it, we'll divide this all up. You'll realize that Benjamin was down here and Judah was down here, and why Gad and Reuben and Issachar and Zebulun and all the rest of them were in the north. They actually took over a portion of the land. Some of it, what we call Transjordan, or the other side of the Jordan. But that's a rough look at Phoenicians to the north, Philistines to the south, Judah and Israel. Now, somewhere along the line, they're going to get into captivity. There's going to be the takeover from the north by the Assyrians, up and across. And I think I have a... Here we go. The Assyrians are going to come down, and about 730-something B.C., and this nation is going to rise up and come down and conquer the northern part of Israel. They don't take the south. They only get to the top 10 tribes. And they're going to haul some of them away, and then they're going to mix in some people. We're going to spend a lot of time understanding it, but that's what happens. And then roughly 100 and some years later, the Babylonian kingdom rises up. They're going to come over, and this time they're going to go all the way down to the south and wipe everybody out. Their plan is not to mix, but to capture. And they take the cream of the crop with them back to Babylon. Daniel... Story of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel and his three buddies are carted off during that deportation. And they're over in the nation of Babylon in captivity. So you're coming with me. They're down there for 70 years. God promised it would only last 70, and at the end of the 70 years, the captivity ends. The story begins with the book of Ezra and Nehemiah and their return. The wonderful things, there was several waves of people that returned and leaders of those waves. And then the stories of what happened, the rebuilding of the temple, the rebuilding of the walls, Nehemiah rebuilding the walls, Ezra more focused on the spiritual side. So the time frame for that is about 538 BC when the rebuilding begins. The temple gets dedicated in 516. Now which temple is that? That's Zerubbabel's temple, the second temple. Although the Jews don't even call it a second temple. If you ask them about the second temple, they think it's Herod's. They just skip Zerubbabel's. They just don't even want to acknowledge it because Zerubbabel's temple was such a cheap version, because when they returned, they didn't have any money. They didn't have all those resources to build such a glorious temple as had been built under Solomon's day. So they built a cheapy version. And Jews don't even want to refer to it. It's just like a little thing they built. It's not really a temple. Until Herod got there. Now then we have what we call 400 years of silence between the closing of the canon of the Old Testament and the beginning of the canon of the New Testament. There's 400 years in there where there is quote silence. Now it's not really silence, but there's not a lot being canonized, written down, that are becoming books of the Bible. If you have a Catholic background and you have a Bible, a section in your Bible is called the Apocrypha. And the Apocrypha are all the books that were written during that period of the 400 years of silence. They're very interesting reading, and there's a couple of them that I go, wonder why they didn't get in the canon. Mm-hmm. And when we get to the intertestamental period, I'll talk a little bit about that. But not much is going on for about 400 years. Then somewhere around 5 BC, Jesus Christ is born. And again, I said that we timed that based on the death or the life, specifically though the death of Herod, because we know when that happened in 4 BC. So Jesus has got to get on the scene before Herod dies, because in Luke 2 the story says, hey, Herod's there and killing off babies, etc., right? Mm-hmm. So he's got to be there before 4 BC. Now Jesus lived about 33 and a third years. He started his public ministry about when he was 30. So that's going to put him, somewhere around 29 A.D. He's going to get murdered on the cross. He's going to be crucified, and he's going to resurrect somewhere around 33 A.D. Now, Paul's going to come along, who wrote most of our New Testament, And when he comes along, he's going to get converted around 35 A.D. When we get into the book of Acts and you see him at Stephen's stoning, he's holding all the coats of everyone that's stoning Stephen. And then in the chapters that ensue, tell you about his persecution. He was a big head honcho going around killing Christians. And then on a road, on the way back to his area of Damascus, God knocks him on his keister, literally, and they have a little encounter, and he comes to accept Jesus Christ as indeed Lord. And then he flows through most of the book of Acts. He becomes the leader. And he writes most of our New Testament, about 13 books, depending on whether you agree he wrote Hebrews. So most of the New Testament books are coming together somewhere between 50 and 65 A.D., so by the time we get to 67 A.D., which is when we believe Paul is executed, most of the New Testament books are done. We know Titus, the ruler of Rome, he destroys the temple in 70 A.D. And when I was in Rome, one of my highlights was to go to the Arch of Titus, and there's a ginormous big arch. And on the arch, they always told historical stories about themselves to pump themselves up. And in one section of it, there is all this relief of him conquering Jerusalem. And there's a picture of his soldiers carrying away the menorah out of the temple and other temple artifacts. And standing there looking at that was the weirdest thing. It was like, you bum, I can't, oh man. And I was really deep into it, and people behind me were muttering because I wouldn't get out of the way so they could take the whole picture of the arch. All I really cared about was that section that was telling the story of him destroying the temple, but about 70 A.D. John's going to write the book of Revelation on the island of Patmos in about 95 A.D. So the New Testament, as we know, is going to range from about 60 A.D. to about 95 A.D. in terms of its writing. Now, some of you, that kind of a timeline is really helpful. That works, you get it, it's linear. You can memorize a few key dates, and in a minute I'm going to suggest at least three, and you can get down the timeline. For some of the rest of you, maybe another way helps. And so I put two pieces of paper in your notes. And since I'm this kind of a person, I taped it together. You can do that at home. So I had myself a little horizontal timeline. Now what's on here is essentially the same stuff you and I just went through in that other timeline, but the thing that's interesting about this one is across the top is biblical history, things that occurred in the Bible record, and across the bottom is world history. So for those of you that actually know something about world history and it interests you, I shouldn't say it that way, those of you that like history and it interests you, you can pick out events in history you know about, to go to the top and go, oh, well, that's what was going on from a standpoint of the Bible. So start in the top left-hand corner of the first page, and you can see that it has the creation and the fall. And then when we get to about 2000 BC, here comes the patriarchs. And next week we're going to study Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and probably Joseph. So the patriarchs, the heads, the rulers, the leaders of the beginning biblical history. Then you've got a period of time while they were in Egypt, in slavery, and all the stories about Joseph, how he was born, how he was captured, when he went to Egypt, what happened to him, and what went on during the time of the Egyptian slavery period. Moses is born. You all know the story of Moses. Little baby floating in a little, basket in there. You know that, but when did it happen? Well, it happened right here during the Egyptian slavery period. It's a place to hang it in your mind. Then there's something called the Exodus, when they got to leave Egypt. You know a lot about that, the 10 plagues. You know about the Passover. How many times have you heard about the Passover? It happens at the end of the Egyptian slavery period. So then we got an Exodus. We're going to wander around the desert, the Sinai Peninsula to be exact, and then they're going to come in, the conquest. They're going to come out of the wilderness, and they're going to settle in Canaan. Can you see the settle in Canaan part right above the word judges? So then once they're into the land, they don't have kings yet. They need regional judges. And that's where Deborah and Samson and Gideon and all those guys fall. And then they clamor for the king. You're still with me? And the first king is Saul. You can see the dates here are about 1020. And then after Saul, then there's David, and after David, there's Solomon. And at the death of Solomon, the kingdom splits. It splits into the north and the south. Another way of looking at it, north is Israel, southern two tribes is Judah. You can see it right there, end of your piece of paper. So the next piece of paper, we pick up the same timeline, still in the top left-hand corner, and you're going to have something that says the fall of Samaria. You see that? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can think in your mind, fall of the northern tribes. And a little bit further along, we're going to have the fall of the southern tribes, because now we're going to have the exile. They're going to go into Babylon. And while they're in Babylon, there's some things going on, some writing happening, like Ezekiel and Daniel. And then when they come out of the exile, 70 years at the end of the exile, there's a restoration. They're going to come back to the land. When they come back to the land, the two books that are primarily going to tell us about that are Ezra and Nehemiah. And all along that time period, prophets are preaching. Clean up your act, judgment's coming. That's essentially what all the prophets say. In my Bible reading, when I get to Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, and then 12 minor prophets, it's over and over again. You could write an outline, clean up your act, judgment's coming. And every one of those books, that's essentially what the prophet's saying, because watch out, here comes judgment. And in fact, it happens. You get to the end of the restoration, the temple's rebuilt, they're back in the land, then we're going to have what's called the intertestamental period, 400 years of silence, and then we're going to jump in to the New Testament period. So for some of you, this one might work. Okay? So let's vote. Which of you like the what would that be? Horizontal? No, that'd be literal, linear. Yeah, you know, the first one. How many of you like that timeline? Okay. How many of you like this timeline? Oh, good. I'm glad I put it in there. Tape it together. Put it on your mirror. Start to study. All right. I'm being funny, but... I'm hustling along because what I really want to get to is a chart. So stick with me that I think this chart will really help you. One other thing I wanted to give you by way of notes was who were the foreign rulers that were ruling Israel. Now the one slide I've got up here is highlighting Assyria and the Babylonians. But if you look at page 5, Roman numeral C, you're going to see that the Babylonians, there's the destruction of the first temple. Then they've got a Persian empire. Then we've got the Hellenists, which are Greek. Then we've got the Roman. Then we've got the Byzantine. Then we've got the Arabs. Then we've got the Crusaders. Then we've got Mamluk. Then we've got the Ottoman Empire. And then we have the Brits. And if you really want to have a fun time, study what happens once the Brits get Israel. And that'll bring you up to current day. But that's the major events or major empires that captured and ruled Israel since 587 BC. Now, cheat sheet. Here it is. Key biblical dates to memorize. These were the first dates that I ever memorized about the Bible. Abraham came along about 2000 BC. David came along about 1000 BC. Jesus came along about zero. Okay, so that's my George Washington, Civil War, Truman. You know? At least it's a place to start. So if you're going to memorize any dates... You got Abraham at about 2000 BC. You got David at about 1000 BC. You got Jesus at about zero. Now you got a place to start. All right. Next piece in your notes is a little bookshelf. And I wanted to try to get those of you that are not quite as familiar with your Bible is a way to organize the 39 books of the Old Testament. There are 66 books in our Bible that made it into the canon. The word canon just means a measuring rod, like a yardstick. And it literally is a reed, and they measured things with reeds. The reason it's called the canon is which books measured up. When they got to the place of trying to ask God which books should become brought together and are instructive for the Christian life, which books would make it into the canon, they would measure up. That the church would, as a group, go, yep, that's one God inspired. Mm-hmm. We want that one. In the scheme of things, we got 66 books. 39 in the Old Testament. 3 times 9 is what? 27. 27 books in the New Testament. So 39 in the Old, 27 in the New. Now, the 39, if you organize them like I have them on this piece of paper, at least for most of us, I think it will make life easier. You have five books that are called the books of the law. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Written by Moses. They're not the first books that were actually penned. We believe Job was the first book that was actually penned. But in the canon, in the list of the books that we have, by the way, that list is not the same list that the Jews would have. The Jewish canon is organized a little different. They would organize things under the heading of the writings and the prophets and history. We have them a little differently. But the first five are the books of the law. All right? You with me? Then you got 12 books of history, starting with Joshua. Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 Samuel, 1 Kings, 1 Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. Now, a couple of comments about those 12. 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings are chronological. Okay, so you start with 1 Samuel and you work your way through to the end of 2 Kings. It's a chronological, historical account of the nation of Israel. You get to 1 Chronicles and what happens? Yeah, it looks like it's a repeat. I remember the first time I read through my Bible and I got to the end of 2 Kings and then started 1 Chronicles. I got, wait a minute. Wait, do it again? Do-over? Why? Okay, 1 and 2 Chronicles is written as a history covering virtually the same material as 1 and 2 Samuel to the end of 2 Kings, but it's only from the perspective of Judah, the southern tribes. So it's a very narrow look at history. It's not messing around with the northern tribes. It's not messing around with what was happening in the north. It's just really focused on the southern tribes or Judah. Then Ezra and Nehemiah, they're post-exilic. They're after the exile. How do we know that? Well, because they're going to talk about rebuilding the wall and rebuilding the temple. And Esther is a story of a woman that happens during the exile. So they're chronological in form, and there's 12 of them. Then we get five books called the books of poetry. Now, it's not poetry like you and I think poetry. It's not rhyming, but it's poetry as in a class of literature. The book of Job is in it, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon. The one that's odd in that group is Job. It feels odd to be in a poetry category, but it's a piece of literature. That's why it's there. So we get 5, 12, 5. Then we're going to have five major prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations. What does the word lamentation mean? What does it mean? To cry or to weep. Jeremiah is known as the weeping prophet. The man has a tender heart. He writes two books, the book of Jeremiah, and then he adds Lamentations. So it's really not five prophets, but it's five prophecy books. So Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, and Daniel. Why are they called major? Are they more important? No. They're longer. That's it. They just wrote more. They were more prolific. So five books of the law, 12 books of history, five books of poetry, five books of prophets. Here it comes, 12 minor prophets. They're not less important. Most people ignore them. They're weird. They don't make sense. You got nowhere to hang them. So by the time we get through this class, you'll know where to hang the minor prophets. They are intriguing. There are some incredible things in the minor prophets. But you got to know a little bit about the history to get it. The context is everything. The minor prophets, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and the last one is Malachi. Interesting that Malachi is last. It's the verse that talks about there's a forerunner coming, and who's the first person on the scene in the New Testament who is indeed called the forerunner of Christ? John the Baptist. So we're going to have our intertestamental period between Malachi and the starting of the New Testament. But that is one way to get the Old Testament in your mind. But wait, I have a better one. Which brings us to our chart. I love this chart. It's my favorite chart in the world. You get this chart down, you will never be confused in your Bible again. You memorize this chart. This is it. Tell your husband, honey, we got to memorize this chart. I'm telling you, it'll set you free. Okay. I don't even know who I stole this chart from. It was somebody smart, no doubt. But I'm telling you, once I got this in my mind, it was like nirvana. Switching illustrations here. All right. The purpose of this chart is to place all 39 books in a historical context. It's trying to provide you, if you will, some scaffolding that makes sense from a historical perspective. So, on the left-hand side, you'll see it says, the flow of biblical history. You see that little arrow? This one right here. So if we were going to flow in a historical context, what's the first book that would show up here?
Genesis.
Yeah, very good. Now, you're going to be tempted to say, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and you would be wrong. Genesis is the first one. Write it in there, Genesis. The second one is Exodus. The story flows from Genesis to Exodus. You got it. And then Numbers, absolutely, third box. Numbers, flowing, story. And then we have to halt. Because the book of Leviticus and the book of Deuteronomy are not in the flow. They're what you might call a supplemental book. And it doesn't say it, but on my chart I wrote supplemental right here. Supplemental books. So, I already told you what I believe is the first book that was penned. What did I say?
Job.
So, I believe Job goes right there. Supplemental to the account that's in Genesis. It's not part of the historical flow. Supplemental. Okay, in light of that, if we didn't put Leviticus and Deuteronomy in the first three or four boxes, we're going to have to put Leviticus here. And what goes in this third one?
Deuteronomy.
The word Deuteronomy is, Deutero means second. It's the second writing of the law. Where was the first writing of the law? The book of Leviticus. So my supplemental books, the little oblong ones or whatever they are, Job, Leviticus, Deuteronomy. So now back over here into my flow of biblical history, we got Genesis, Exodus, and Numbers. What's going to be next in terms of historical flow? Nope.
Joshua.
Joshua. And logically, right after Joshua is? Judges. Then, Carol is correct, the big boxes, because there's lots that goes in there, you're going to have 1 Samuel, then 2 Samuel, then 1 Kings, then 2 Kings.
Does that all go in the first box?
No. 1 Samuel... 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings. Sorry, thank you, good question. There are no dumb questions, especially when your teacher's blowing it. 1 Samuel, I should write it, but I didn't do that. That's a smart idea. I hate it that you're so smart.
1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings. That would have been smart to do. Genesis, hang on, don't guess ahead. So we got Job, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, this is Exodus, Numbers, Joshua, Judges. Okay?
Okay. Now, Ruth is a story that takes place in the period of the Judges. So where would Ruth go? Right here, supplemental book. Thank you for reminding me to write on the board. I did all this, and then I don't forget to use it. Now, I've already told you what goes into these two books. First Chronicles, Second Chronicles. They're the same thing. They're just being written from a slightly different perspective. They don't go in the flow because they're hiccups. They're coming back. One more time. They're do-overs. Okay, everyone with me so far? Okay, when we got to 1 Samuel, 1 Samuel is primarily a story of which is the first king? The first king?
Saul.
Saul. Right there. Dotted line over there. There's Saul. So Saul, primarily a story here. David, primarily a story starting in 2 Samuel. Solomon shows up towards the end of 2 Samuel, right? That is the United Kingdom. They have not split. The split boys come with the Boam boys. The Boam boys are Solomon's son and his buddy. Rehoboam, Jeroboam, the Boam boys. That's how I memorize things, sorry. The Boam boys show up. So during the United Kingdom, covered by 1 and 2 Samuel, Saul, David, Solomon, and then it's going to split. Northern Kingdom, also known as Israel. Southern Kingdom, also known as Judah. 10 tribes of the north, 2 tribes of the south. Now we've got to place in some prophets that are going on here during our period. And we've got to get a sense of some books that were written. So let's go to David. What book primarily did David write?
Psalms.
Yippee-doo. Solomon. Solomon is going to write us 3 books.
Proverbs,
Ecclesiastes, and this is a tough one, Song of Solomon. Doesn't this make logical sense? Didn't I tell you the chart would set you free? You memorize this, you are home free. Okay.
I have a question.
Already?
Song of Solomon, I've also heard it referred to as Song of Songs.
Yes.
Does it?
Either way. But
yeah,
Solomon wrote it.
Yeah.
Yep. Now we've got to get some prophets in here. What helps us is the northern 10 tribes were the least spiritual. They were the scummy boys. And so they had fewer prophets working among them. So we only have 2 right here. And they are Amos and Hosea. Amos, that's a name. Lousy looking name. Alright. Working in Judah, doing a lot of preaching. We got a lot of them. And so we got Joel, we got Micah, we got Isaiah, we got Zephaniah. We got Habakkuk, and we got Jeremiah. That's the order. Joel, Micah, Isaiah, Zephaniah, Habakkuk, and Jeremiah. Now, in the flow of history coming down, after the tribes, or after the kingdom splits, now we're going to have the Assyrians come in and wipe them out. The northern tribes. And 100 or so years later, the Babylonians are going to come in and wipe them out. So they're going to have some prophets that do some preaching while they're out of town, while they're in captivity. And they are Jonah, Nahum, and Obadiah. Jonah, Nahum, N-A-H-U-M. And Obadiah. Okay? I'm not going anywhere. So these are all our prophets. Alright? Okay, back the truck up. Let's go back to the flow. Flow of history. So we've got Israel coming into the land. By the time we get to the period of the judges, we've got Joshua, and then the period of the judges. Then we've got the period of the United Kingdom, Saul, David, Solomon. Then we got the kingdom busts up, 10 tribes to the north, 2 tribes to the south. They're going to go into exile, into Babylonian exile. There are 2 books. When they return. And on your notes over here on this side, it should say return from exile, right? Mm-hmm. What are the 2 books? Ezra and Nehemiah. Can't write upside down. Ezra and Nehemiah. While they were in captivity, while they're in exile, 2 prophets were doing some serious preaching. Now think of a story that you know that happened during the Babylonian captivity. What is the story?
Daniel.
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. In the fire furnace. Everybody knows that story. That's Daniel. So one of these two boxes has got to be Daniel. So this is Daniel. Yeah, the first one. The second one is also a major prophet who had all kinds of weird and interesting visions, some of them having to do with the end times. The book of Ezekiel.
What time period is this?
This is during the exile. Now, there is a story in the Bible. Who knows whether you've come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Esther, that happened during the exile. So Esther is right here. Now we have three prophets left to place. They're what's called post-exile. And they are in the bottom three items at the bottom. They are Haggai, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zephaniah, and Malachi. Yes.
We put Zephaniah under us.
No, you put it there. Zephaniah. Wait a minute. Did I do Zephaniah twice?
Yeah.
Hold it. Remain calm. Zechariah is down here. Zechariah. I said Zephaniah. I'm wrong. Zechariah. And then Malachi. Zach. This is Zach. And this is Malachi. Now, did anybody notice that we didn't place a book? What book did we not place? No, we got Hosea. Yeah. No, Lamentations. And for some reason that I know not of, the writer of this chart put Lamentations right there. And I'm not sure why. Lamentations. I would have put him near Jeremiah. I would have put that chart, that little one over here, next to Jeremiah. So if you want to do it, put it over there next to Jeremiah. I should have caught that and done that. Okay. Has everybody got that filled out?
Yes.
Now, just to help you, I think. If you got this flow, start here on this side. If you're new to this, start on this side. Say, I get it. Genesis, Exodus, and Numbers. They're a storyline. If you take your Bible, read the book of Genesis, read the book of Exodus, read the book of Numbers, you're going to get the story. You get it. The patriarchs, they go into captivity, they're getting ready to come out of captivity, they're ready to come into the promised land. The story flows. That makes very good sense. Then Joshua's going to lead them into the promised land. Not a problem. Then Joshua. Then once they get into the promised land, they have to have some sort of organization. They need judges, regional rulers. Judges, we're good. Logical. And that people are going to clamor for a king. Logical. First king, Saul. Story of Saul. Then Saul comes along. He gets to the side picture. Here comes David. Logical. David. David has a son, has several sons, but the one that follows him in leadership is Solomon. Got it. Oh, and so I don't get myself confused. Here he is. Here's Saul. Here's David. Here's Solomon. Got to remember, oh, David wrote Psalms, most of them, not all of them. Moses wrote one psalm. Did you know that? One psalm was Moses. And there's some others that are in there by other people, but mostly David. Solomon wrote three books. No problem. I got him. I got him in the right period. I know where he is. There he is. There's his three books. Then I know the kingdom's going to divide. When it divides, Israel's to the north, Judah's to the south. Judah gets most of the prophets. Just a couple of them were in the northern part, exclusively. Now, interestingly, Isaiah and some of the others preach in both places, and when we get there, we'll tell you. But primarily, these two are up screaming in the north, and those guys are all screaming in the south. Then we're going to have an exile. Okay, I get it. They're going to get carted off to Babylon. David and Ezekiel, they're going to do some serious prophecy. They're going to return. When they return, we're going to have books of Ezra and Nehemiah.
Daniel's
here. And Ezekiel.
You said David.
Did I say David? Oh, I'm sorry. Daniel and Ezekiel. While they were out of town, they had three other prophets, Jonah, Nahum, and Obadiah. Remember, Jonah was sent to preach to Nineveh. And he didn't want to go. That's the context of that story. He's out of town. He didn't want to be out of town. He's ticked that he's going to lead those guys to Christ. Nahum has an interesting story, so does Obadiah. When they come back, the temple is rebuilt, the city's reset up. Now we're going to have some post-exilic prophets of Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. It makes sense.
And then there's the 400 years.
And then there's 400 years. Questions about my little chart that I stole from somebody? It's the best chart I've ever seen to try to organize the closet of the Old Testament. And for me, once I had that in my head, then I could start plunking in stories. In fact, in the early days, that's what I was doing, is I would write little stories in these notes until my closet sort of started taking shape. Someone, yes?
So, if I'm reading my chronological Bible,
yes,
in Genesis, they're going to have parts of Job.
Yeah.
During the time that it was.
Yeah, and in Genesis, they're going to plunk, or in Exodus, they're going to plunk in the stuff having to do with Leviticus, and then he's going to plunk in second law issues having to happen at the end of Numbers. Absolutely. Chronological Bibles are cool. They're cool tools. All right. Other questions or comments on that? So the goal of this lesson was to try to get you thinking in terms of timeline. Trying to get you to have some sort of a flow of how the 39 books of the Old Testament organize themselves. And if you'll spend a little time with that, take your Bible, look at, just skim a few chapters of a book that you're not as familiar with, and go, oh, I get it, that's where that story is. Okay?